100.9 FM, 1570 AM, WOKC, Okeechobee's True Country. From 1987, Waylon's classic, Rose in Paradise. And before that, one of Taylor's favorite Waylon songs, Are You Ready for the Country? Gives me pleasure to present to you the very first episode / segment of Billy's Back Porch. And on my back porch today, enjoying a couple of cold ones, I have Mr. Wayne Purvis and Mr. Mitch Markham. Morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
That's a good way. Long way to see. Long way to see.
All righty. First of all, I want to ask Wayne how you hooked up with Mitch. Let's give our listeners a little story about how y'all got together. First of all, when Wayne and I saw each other in the parking lot of Home Depot a few months ago, he told me about what he'd been doing out at Mitch's house. So share with our listeners how y'all got together and started recording songs and stuff. But
when we first met, I guess it was Cody Williams. He was working. Mitch was working with him, and we went to do the Sugar Festival, and that's where me and Mitch first met. So over the next couple of years, we got to be friends, got to play together in a few different bands and different things. And I had been recording. I had a studio I was setting up. Mitch was kind of helping me, and the way things turned out, I kind of stopped everything I was doing and wound up at his studio, the only basement studio in Florida, I think. Yeah.
Probably the only basement.
Right.
But, yeah, he had been recording a lot of the local guys, mm-hmm. you know, helping people out and getting a lot of the younger guys started recording. And so I told him one night, I said, why don't I come over and I'll bring some songs and we'll pick out one to record. And after about an hour of sitting there, we picked out 9.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah.
So we got started recording on those. We about got everything finished up.
All right. So you were telling me the other night, you've always had some type of recording studio at wherever you lived.
Right.
How does a former baseball coach get into recording songs with music and play it? Because he just mentioned that you play a little bit, drums and bass, right?
Yep, I've always enjoyed music, and actually got I told my wife I was going to record a song and put it on iTunes, and she was like, go for it. Yeah. So I bought a computer and bought some stuff and got started that way. I had to find a singer, so I called Cody up and started. It was terrible at first. I mean, the only thing I knew how to do was hit the record button and hit save. But after about 10 years, stuff's decent now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with digital audio, man.
It's unbelievable. We use Pro Tools, which is the same stuff they use up in Nashville. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it, you know, and get the guys like Wayne and those guys to come out. It's really, really fun.
All right. Well, I mentioned to Ken earlier, Ken, our voice of Okeechobee, about y'all coming on today. And he said it's something he used to do back at his radio station in Ohio. But he said that you had mentioned that to him out at the ball field years ago. And he said, well, just get in touch with Billy. Get in touch with Billy.
Yeah.
And I told y'all the other night I was over at your house. This was an idea that our former general manager, Will Skinner, thought of 10, 12 years ago. He said, maybe we'll create a show to have local talent come on. So this is our very first episode of it. We're going to do this the first Friday of every month. We've got quite a few folks lined up for the rest of the year. But, you know, I think it's a great opportunity for us to find out about you know, local performing artists. And these are guys that don't have a record contract, but are out there performing at water holes and honky-tonks around the lake. I mean, we've got J.J. McCoy over at Jackson's in Lake Placid. You mentioned that girl the other night over from
Abby Owens.
From Indian Town.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get, and there are so many other folks. Roger Garrison, Chris Crispenberry from Saddle Tramp. We're going to get them to come on. So if you're listening over at Lehman's Painting a Vehicle, Roger, you're definitely on the list, buddy. And quite a few other people. But but I think it's going to be a great opportunity for us. And we want to thank the powers that be at Glades Media that are allowing us to do this. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun, don't y'all?
Yeah, I do.
Now, speaking of Glades Media, I want you to take us back when you were your young buck, man. You said your dad used to be a DJ here at WOKC. Way back in the day, you would record a song, take it to Mr. Stokes, and he put it in some type of program you had. Share with us a little bit of your history in WOKC and your dad's.
Yeah, my dad had worked, I guess, in the early 60s, back when it was at the old motel.
And you mean the Heartland Motel in the middle of town? Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was when he worked there. So it had to have been in the early 60s, maybe a little earlier than that. But I grew up knowing all the guys at the radio station, and Mr. Stokes, we would write a song and put it on a cassette, and he would have the Battle of the New Sounds every night, and he would play like 3 or 4 songs, and people could call and vote on what song, you know, they liked the best. So he would always stick our song on there with 3 songs that he was pretty sure wasn't going to win. he didn't put any Merle Haggard or anything on there against us. So, but he'd let us come there and play that. But And he would always, all the stuff in the park, he would always go up there and work so hard. You know, even when he got on up in years, you know, he was always right there 110% behind all the guys that played. But he would let us come in. He'd put our song. It was kind of weird because he'd always put on three songs with it, and you're like, well, them songs will never probably be played on the radio again. So we always won when we got on there.
Well, so he was real big in helping promote local artists, wasn't he?
Definitely.
I mean, yeah. I've heard stories of Gary at the Wagon Wheel, and I'm
pretty sure he played music. I remember him when I was real young. I think he played guitar and sang. I think he played guitar, but you know, he was really into, you know, all the musicians.
You mean Mr. Stokes?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, I remember him playing guitar and singing a couple times, but
we called himself Singing Sheriff. Yeah. That was his moniker. You know, a lot of folks don't realize how much. I mean, I had the privilege of meeting the man many years ago. Always dressed to the nines.
Yeah,
you know, and what he did for this community. I mean, to launch this station back in '62, and this February we'll roll up our 60th anniversary. And I've told y'all the other night at the house. In today's radio world, they don't let you do this sort of thing. They're like, no, we've got a music list we want you to follow. And I've been this here 19 years, and the powers that be allow us to take requests. I used to take requests in Fort Myers, just couldn't play them. You know, because they're like, well, we have a music director we're paying some money to create a list. So this, that, and the other. And I just think that, you know, I not a day goes by I don't appreciate WOKC and what it does for the community to have guests come on, interview them, and so on and so forth. But I looked at this opportunity to, and I've been going since I moved here in 05 to the watering holes around here. And this is one of the few places on a Friday and Saturday night you hear people picking and singing. They're picking and singing covers a lot, but they're picking and singing their own original material. And I just think it's a real cool thing to be able to do this and have this platform to promote it.
Absolutely.
There's always been a lot of songwriters come out of Okeechobee, you know, back through the years. It's like most of the bands that are here have, you know, songs that they wrote. They just, it's hard even in the nightclubs, it's hard to promote your own music. Everybody wants to hear songs that they know and they can sing to. And so it's even in there, it's kind of, you got to kind of work them in and be real selective where you play them. And whatever, a lot of the guys in here have, you know, have songs they've written, and they play them every night. And you'll, we like Timmy Bass. When we go to play, there's hardly every night goes by somebody don't come get us to play a Timmy Bass.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Sam Thompson, all the, you know, all the old songs people still request.
Billy Earl, you were talking about him the other night, you know.
Yeah. He was the one that actually got me into the songwriting, really helped me out a lot when I was first starting. And I'd bring songs to him, and he'd circle all the parts, go change all these parts and bring it back. And we'd go through that time and time, and finally, you know, when he finally looked at you, said, hey, that's good. You know, that meant, he's one of the people that when he'd give you a compliment, you could, that meant something, because he didn't do that, you know, all the time. But he had a few songs that he kind of coached me through the whole process. And so,
if people don't realize too, man, when it comes to writing a song, especially a country song, it's really a story, all right? And for folks who don't know, man, most songs, you got a couple of verses and a chorus. There's also something called a bridge, which is a part in the song where you're going to get a lot of instrumental after that particular part. And this is a part that, for me, we use a lot when you're recording a concert promo. If you're recording, you're going to promote so-and-so and such, you know, you'll use that bridge. You'll say their name, and that bridge is some of their picking and stuff. But, you know, some songs will even have three verses. But do you agree with me? It's two verses and a chorus usually. And for, unfortunately, in radio, they cap you at a time. They want you into 3:30, under 4 minute mark. But some of the greatest country classics are in the 2:15, 2:30 mark. Only Daddy That'll Walk the Line, I think, is 2:15. But tell us a little bit about you know, your experiences of songwriting and stuff, you know, over the years. I mean,
a lot of things that's changed now is when I first started writing, one of the big things was that you had the same, you could take that music and write it out in note form, and your words, your syllables and your words would fit that first verse, the second verse, everything rhymed properly. And now it's like a lot of your newer music, that all that kind of went out the, I guess, trying to get a different sound, probably what it is. But that back then they were real structured on how they did, how you were writing songs. Where now it's more open to, now the more different it is, the better it works. So it's all change. It changes all the, you know, music's always changing. So every 4 or 5 years, you have to kind of adjust your writing style to you know, if you want to get something out there played, you got to keep adjusting with what's going on. And it's just constantly evolving.
Mitch, let me ask you this. You were telling me the other night that when y'all first met her years ago, you played with Wayne down at the Sugar Festival. What instruments do you play at this time?
I play the bass guitar and the drums. Not very good at either one of them, but good enough to fake it for a while.
You're beatkeeper.
Hey,
you're beatkeeper, right? Listen, you know that down note, man.
I've come to grips with the terms that every time I get on a stage, I'll be the worst musician up there.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah, you're having fun doing something.
Yeah, man, I enjoy it.
A lot less stressful coaching baller coordinator.
Oh, my goodness gracious. It's completely different.
Well, Matt, so how long have you been doing as far as the digital recording stuff with these? Before you met Wayne, man, how'd you get into that? I mean, how'd you get started with that?
Yeah, I bought that an iMac by Macintosh back in 2011, and it came with the GarageBand, which is pretty much your entry level recording software, and just a couple mics. And of course, at 10 years later, I have a bunch of equipment now and better recording software. Like I said, the same stuff that they use in Nashville, the industry standard, which is Pro Tools, compressors, EQ things, and preamps, things like that. Better microphones. You saw a couple of those mics.
So you didn't go to any kind of school of music. You just did a lot of reading and as far as finding out how all this works. Because what Mitch is called in our business is a producer,
right?
All right, and it's no different. I produce radio commercials. You produce a show. You produce this. But a lot of folks have no idea what that term means. You know, when you hear record producer or music producer, you know, you're producing a product. It's no different than somebody out there growing vegetables. You produce produce. You know, you're producing a product that hopefully the public will enjoy and buy.
There's a lot that goes into it to get a good recording. And, you know, the fancy equipment is good. But the biggest thing is just having a good song and having a good performance and good musicians. Years ago, I would try to play most of the parts, and it was terrible because I'm not a good musician.
No, explain that to us when you say it, because I don't mention to y'all about Tom T. Hall. He told me once he got a hold of his first digital hardware, or software rather, 22 years ago. He'd go down into his basement.
Right.
He laid down the bass. He laid down the electric, the keyboard, and the drums. And then he'd come back and not only sing the lead, he'd sing the vocal, the harmony, rather.
Right.
So this was a complete Tom T. Hall tune from beginning to end. And then
That's exactly right. And you could do one instrument at a time. So I was doing that 10 years ago. And, of course, it doesn't sound as good because I'm not a good musician. And then when the same musician plays all the parts, it just doesn't have the same dynamics. You know, if you can get different musicians, they're going to bring a different feel to that song, and the song really starts to liven up when you have different musicians, and especially guys that are really good. You know, if Wayne plays guitar and sings, it's going to be great. If I try to play guitar, it's not going to be near as good. And, of course, we have a fiddle player from Vero Beach that's played on the albums, and he's unbelievable.
You know, what's his name?
Trevor Klutz.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, very good. He's playing with Cody Saturday, I think, down at Butch's. Wayne's played with him. He's very good.
Yeah.
He's actually went to school for bluegrass, but he's on the album.
Now you mentioned when I was over at the house about you're able to email tracks to him, then he lays down his part. How does that work?
That's
he
exactly
emails it back to you, and then you mix it all together.
Yeah, so we can email the track, the song, to the musician, which, of course, he's over in Vero. He records it, sends it back to me, and then I can dump that right into the my platform where I'm working, and then mix it all together. And that's a lot of musicians are doing that now. Instead of going up to, say, to Nashville to have somebody record a guitar track or a drum track, you just send them the track, and a professional musician can record that in their house and send it back to you through email, and it's done.
Wow.
We just met the drummer last night, Stuart. He's going to be doing some drum tracks for us, and he just got the information, and Mitch will send him the drum tracks today, and probably, you know, next week sometime he'll come over and lay all the drum tracks down.
Oh, that is amazing.
But it saves time on traveling, you know, and trying to get everybody together at one time. You can take an album, can be spread out over a year. With the way I show up to late all the time, it's taken us about 6 months.
Hey, you know, musicians, they got to play in time, but they don't necessarily show up in time.
That's like when Billy told me he said he was going to be here from 10 to 11. I thought, man, who's up that late listening to the radio?
Come on,
the first 10.
Hey,
he's talking about in the morning. Yeah. Wow.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. We're going to find out your favorite artists. maybe some influences. You know, I know you just don't go get into producing music. Somehow or another, somebody had something had to trigger that. So we're going to tap into that here in just a little bit after this break. We'll be right back in just a few minutes with more of Billy's Back Porch and our special guests, Wayne Purvis and Mitch Markham. And we're back inside Billy's Back Porch with our special guest, Mitch Markham and Wayne Purvis. But before we go any further, what do y'all think of the new studio, man? It's a really nice. I mean, by the way, I told you I was in a little closet back there. But they did a heck of a job with this, man. We've come a long way. And you know from way back in the day, seeing the WOKC studios from way back in. So.
It's definitely changed a lot.
Yeah, yeah, no more multi-track reel-to-reel decks. No carts. No records, you know, but us even have a CD player in here is dinosaur, because most folks I know in the industry don't do it anymore. Now, before we let you pick a little bit, I want to ask Mitch first, how the heck did you get into doing this music thing, man? I mean, you told me about, you know, buying some stuff, this, that, and the other. I mean, was there anybody or anything growing up or when you got to, you know, I asked him the other day at the house, how's a baseball coach go from doing what you used to do to doing what you're doing now?
Like I said, I've always enjoyed music, and I can remember... You know, the music that you have in the house, I guess, is what you grow up with. And we had the soundtrack from Urban Cowboy. I must have listened to that 1,000 times. There's some good stuff on there. And, of course, the Waylon Jennings stuff. And what was the album that Alabama did that had mountain music?
Yeah, it was their debut album.
Oh, man, Tennessee River. I wore that one out. And, of course, I was fortunate to see some live acts. You know, my dad used to take me to the South Florida Fair every year, and they had great acts coming there. I saw Waylon a couple of times, Conway Twitty. So when you hear people like that and you see them live, it really just...
Was that in Tampa?
That's Palm Beach.
Palm Beach, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And, gosh, my mom took me down to see Dottie West and Eddie Rabbit one time. I was talking like 10, 11 years old seeing these people, and it sticks with you when you see those guys.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, oh, big time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was kind of the, just seeing those guys play and stuff, it was just amazing.
Have you ever met any famous performing artists?
Yeah.
Who would say is you're the top, the not no more?
Right now?
No, I meant that you've ever met in your life, you know, dead or alive.
Of course, Montgomery Gentry, both those guys, I met those guys.
Eddie and T-Roy, yeah.
Yeah, Pat Green, which does the Texas country. But I actually met Kenny Chesney, but, you know, not a big fan.
No. I told him the other night about my impression of him. First time, he's just getting started. He signed my hat. The second time, he wouldn't because he was full of himself.
Yeah.
But that happens with some of them, but not all of them.
I don't know if there's a hat big enough for that guy.
I know. How about you, Wayne, man? Who's the first, you know, your favorite artist? In case y'all don't know, is Waylon, right?
That's my favorite. That's always been my favorite artist, was Waylon. But probably the nicest, friendliest one I ever met was Scotty Amrit.
Mm-hmm. He was for folks who don't know, he's a guitar player and writer with Toby.
Right.
And he tried to make it on his own once. That didn't work out. But go listen to the Bus songs. They're not for radio, but and I've heard them both live. I've heard the two of them do an amplified acoustic in Fort Myers during a break in their concert. But he's a phenomenal writer and performer.
Yeah, I got to hang out with him and Jake Owens at a show they were doing. And Scotty was just one of the coolest people. And he walked on stage. And, you know, I mean, the place is full of people. He walks there right by himself, nothing but an acoustic guitar. And he's like, I'm going to do a song I wrote. Y'all probably heard. And he kicked off, Should Have Been a Cowboy. Well, he stopped singing, and the whole audience is singing. And I thought that would be the coolest thing for a songwriter to ever do.
Yeah.
You know, that many, everybody there knew the words just like you were singing it.
Interesting note about that song, the most played song radio country in the 90s, the entire decade. Was Toby Keith's Should Have Been a Cowboy. It got more spins than any country song from 1990 to 1999. I didn't know that either. But
Scotty wrote quite a few of his songs. He wrote some stuff for a lot of people, but he a lot of the great songs that Toby did, you know, most of them were, you know, him, like Dean Dillon. That was another writer that a lot of people don't know. He wrote a lot of George Strait stuff. And just the most down-to-earth common people you'd ever meet. And then you meet some guys that, you know, are kind of halfway there, and that they don't even want to speak to anybody. Mm-hmm. But there's some. And John Anderson, he was in Okeechobee one time. I got to meet him. Super nice guy. Yeah.
Little boy from Apopka.
Yeah. Most of the ones I've met right here, you know, coming to Okeechobee, like at the reservation, you know, when Travis Tritt and all them guys played out there.
And we talked about him the other night at Mitch's house, man. He's one of my favorite. I mean, Merle's number one. and Tritt's number two. And I love my six pack of legends, but and I had the honor of meeting Merle in Fort Myers, and he didn't sign autographs, but he shook hands very gently because that's his moneymaker. And he was my dad's favorite, and my favorite song, him, The Swinging Doors. But when Travis came out in 89, I thought, man, he's got that outlaw sound that Waylon and Willie and all them boys had, and he's just carrying it on. And, you know, he was kind of, I guess the word's ostracized from the industry because of black leather and the long hair. He had that look. And was it you at No Hats Tour?
Yeah.
91, 92 in Lee County Arena, him and Marty. But he's still picking today and just had an album come out a month or so ago. But you're right, The Reservation, you know, Bellamy Brothers have played out at the fair before. I mean, you can, even around this area and from coast to coast, I've had the opportunity of getting on buses with them and talking to these folks. They're just as down home as ever. And but I can see where some of them, you know, they get up there and they wouldn't give somebody that's trying to make it in the business. And I got a little peek behind the curtain of how hard it is for folks to get their songs played. And
a lot of guys that'll tell you, you know, once they make it to that point where they're playing, you know, the big arenas and big shows, a lot of them guys really like to just go sit down and do, you know, what we're doing, playing some little bar one night and just play whatever you feel like playing.
Yeah.
You know, we're wanting to do what they're doing, and they're wanting to do, you know, it's, I guess if you could have it both ways, but that don't happen.
No, but here's the problem. What they entail is once they sign that record contract, that company controls them. It will tell them, okay, this is what we're going to release as the first single. Your control over your music is almost nil unless you're big enough, you know, the Garths and the Tobys that have their own record companies. But these guys just starting out, and you sign that first one, even though you don't agree with it, there's so many people out there that think they know more about your music than you do.
It's all marketing, you know. I was talking to a friend of mine that was up in Nashville, and he said, you know, he said, we kind of have a plan. We want a male or female this age, this kind of voice, and here's the songs we want to do. He said, you got that package out there already. You're just looking for bodies to fill up the spots.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why a lot of them come, you know, and in a few years you never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. They're, and then you'll notice like you have one guy write a song about one thing and it works really good. So next thing you know, there's 15 songs about the same.
They sound almost the same. Well, tell us about your experiences. You went to Nashville way back in the day. What was your introduction to the madness that is Music City?
Well, the first thing you learn is that the things that impress everybody in the little town you're from don't impress anybody there.
Yeah.
You know, you get somebody half your age shows up and shows you what it's really supposed to sound like. Yeah. But back then, when I was there, it was more of you would meet people.
Give us a time frame. What years was it?
In the early 90s. Mm-hmm. You would go there and you'd meet people, and then, you know, a few years later, the people that I know that had success there, they would meet somebody writing songs or a bartender or whatever it may be, and then a few years down the road, they may work for somebody or marry somebody's daughter that works for whatever, you know, all different stories, but then you wind up making that connection later on, and by the time a person up there gets to a position to help somebody, he's got a 500 friends that all of them are great musicians.
Wow.
You know, so even though he wants to help you, it's like everybody that's in his world is a musician, and they're usually all pretty good. So they can only help so many people, and it gets real discouraging. But then when you come back to where you're from, you know, and you walk into a bar and there's 40 people there and all of them are clapping, and mm-hmm. you know, you get to the point where that makes you just as happy as playing for a few thousand people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as long as you've got a few people there that really are listening and really enjoying what you're doing, that's all that really matters.
Not the quantity, it's the quality.
Exactly.
Kind of like a party, like a back porch party.
That's right.
It's not the quantity of people you have there, it's the quality. I'd rather have, give me five good couples coming to my house where they all get along, we can do this, rather than 50 people. Because them 50 people are looking to eat my groceries and drink my beer and this, that, the other. I want some people that are going to bring their own, you know, and hang out with me and kind of enjoy what I enjoy.
But the Nashville thing definitely puts things in perspective for you. But you can see, like, now, if you're watching me perform one night and, like, Mitch or one of the other musicians walk in, you see the whole thing kind of jump up a step or two.
What do you mean?
Well, you play a little better.
Oh, I see.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, yeah.
Okay. You'll see everybody in the bank. I look over, hey, you see who just walked here?
Yeah, we better kick it up a notch, huh?
Oh, yeah, and that happens, too. So, just the guys that play around here, like if I'm playing and Roger and Chris walk in, it's like, okay, that next song's got to be a good one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Well, isn't that the neat thing about it's musician's family, man, in Okeechobee County, not just Okeechobee. Folks, I know there are folks over in Moorhaven, Clewiston, LaBelle, Fort Myers, Lake Placid, Sebring, Indiantown, all points in between. These little, to me, real Florida's between the interstates, but there are, and even Arcadia, but there's so many people that are just still out there picking and grinning and writing songs and enjoying themselves. And I think that's a great thing about going to these watering holes and honky tonks. You can hear them live, man. And, whether it's just you and Waylon and your drum kit, your machines, or a full band, it's a really cool thing to go in there and just kick back, listen to some great tunes, man. And actually, take a request,
Well, Billy Earl told me when I first started playing, I'd been playing in the bar since I was probably 14 or 15, but I was 18, I was out of school, and he said, if you want to learn how to play, he said, quit your job, take your guitar, and we'll go play music. Well, then we realized neither one of you have any money.
Right.
He's like, well, we'll drive around, you see a bar or something that's got people in it. He said, you just walk in there with your guitar and just set your guitar down. Somebody's going to ask you to play a song. And when you do, you open your case up and you start singing, and you better do your best because that's how we're going to eat. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of stuck with me even, now. It's like you never turn down a job. You got to stay hungry for it.
Yeah.
But that was the way I cut my teeth on learning. He said, if you want to eat, then you've got to go in there and make you $10.
No different than going to some city or something or some town, and you see somebody on a street corner, playing the flute or the saxophone or what, and they've got their case open.
Exactly.
And they'll go ahead and they'll put a couple of dollars and change in there to get it started out, to give you the idea. It doesn't say tips, but you know what that money's for, and people will go by and drop it in there. So.
But that's the way you get real and you learn how to hone your craft and learn how to make people listen and get their attention. And back then, everybody that played in Okeechobee, everybody had songs they had wrote. So if you didn't have a couple songs you had wrote, there's certain things you had to do to earn your place.
All right. Speaking of earning your place, man, I didn't bring you in here without wanting to play. So what we're going to do, we're going to take one short break.
Okay.
We're going to come back, and Wayne's going to play something for us. We'll be right back. By the way, we're going to forego the job connection today, but we thank our sponsor of that segment, Happy Cleaners, for sponsoring it. We will return next Monday at 10:30. And if you want a list of our jobs, you can go to WOKC.com. More Billy's Back Porch with special guests Mitch Markham and Wayne Purvis coming up in just a minute. And welcome back to Billy's Back Porch. Very first episode. We're going to do this the first Friday of every month with special guest Mitch Markham and Wayne Purvis. All right, bud. You mentioned you might want to pick a little bit for us. Before we do, tell us about this guitar you have, my friend. It's got a very special name on it.
Yeah, actually, last night, me and Mitch was at the open mic night.
Where's that at?
At Back to Butch's, and it went a little late. Mm-hmm. So when I woke up at 7 o'clock this morning, I said, I need to change the strings on my guitar. So I grabbed my strings and I walk around. I'm like, oh no, I left my guitar at Butch's.
Yeah.
So yeah. this was my dad's guitar. Mm-hmm. And I made the pick guard and all for him. And this is one of the last guitars he had. And actually at his funeral, this was the one sitting by up there with him. And it hadn't been played since then. So I figured I'd put some strings on it and make sure it still worked.
Said your dad used to be a DJ at WOKC.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right? We haven't shared that story. So before you do this, let's talk about it.
Yeah, he DJed for a few years up there, and then he went to work for the police department. He was there for like 46, 47 years.
What was his name?
Philip Purvis. Mm-hmm. And but he always played music. He played with Mel Tillis and Gary Stewart.
He taught you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
When I grew up, there was always guys at my house playing.
Mm-hmm.
So you either learned to play and sing or you went to bed. That was kind of the deal. So they got pictures of me standing. How low a microphone stand goes down? And I'd have to stand on a pot. They flip it upside down. I'd stand on that so I could reach the microphone to try to sing. So I never really remember learning to play, or it's just something that everybody, it was weird to me to meet when I got to going to school. I'd go, go spend the night with one of my friends. And I was like, well, none of your family plays music? And it's like, no. I'm like, Mom, Dad, these people aren't right. None of them play or anything.
They're different than us, huh?
Yeah, that's something's different over there. Mm-hmm. But that was the thing on Saturday. We'd watch when I was growing up, we'd watch the Porter Wagoner Show mm-hmm. and the Grand Ole Opry, and then Dad would get his guitar out and sit there and play, and we'd all sit around and listen to him.
Yeah. That's cool.
And so that was just, I thought that was, no, I thought everybody did that.
Yeah.
But that was, he used to really play. And then it got to the, when he got older, it got to where his hearing was really bad. Mm-hmm. So then it was hard for him to sing, but he still, he liked to come, he'd always tell me, he said, now when you're singing, you've got to walk out and touch people. That was his thing. He said he'd walk around, you know, and the ladies would be sitting, he'd walk over and put his arm, pat them on the back. Mm-hmm. He said, they won't never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was too bashful. I wasn't going to walk up and talk to anybody.
Yeah. That reminds me of my uncle, man. Because I bet the last thing a guitar player wants is somebody to shake their hand and they want to, you know, prove their manhood in that handshake. But that's your moneymaker. It's like, I shake with my left hand or I give you a fist bump. But I'm sure there's been a few pickers in their time. Somebody, it's like a pitcher, you know, you go shake a pitcher's hand. He's like, oh, man, nah, them are two fingers. I got to be able to throw that four seam or that two seam. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of people think that's funny, but.
It ain't.
No.
Not at all. But it's something that is fun, man, to do is to listen to people perform. We say do something for us.
All right. This is a song that, this is the one that we were recording the lyric, the words to when you were out at the studio the other night. Life's full of twists and turns, memories made and lessons learned. I've learned mine. Well, I could always walk away and live to love another day. It works every time. Well, I'm just a little older. I'm getting used to the pain. I'm still looking for people and places to lay all the blame. I know sometimes things turn out that way, but some things never change. Well, I've been living wide open, running fast. Don't know how long the game will last, but I like to play. It's way too late to turn around. I burned all the bridges down as I walked away. Now I'm a little older. I'm getting used to the pain. And I'm looking for people and places to lay all the blame. And I know sometimes things turn out that way, and some things never change.
All right.
That's awesome, man. That's good stuff right
there. Yeah, I wrote that one late one night. We'd come home from playing, and I just was in the mood and sat down in the living room, just started writing, and wrote in about 10 minutes probably. A lot of my songs I'll work on for hours and hours, and all of a sudden you just sit down and write one.
Yeah.
And it just kind of happens.
Yeah, it was, we were talking earlier about songwriting. You hear somebody say, all I need is a hook and a title or a story or something that happened, or you just hear a line. Somebody will say something someday. And, like, for example, Toby, let's talk a lot more action. All right. Comes up with that line, and you're like, okay. And then from there, he sits down and just, bam, spits it out. And I guess for a lot of people, it's like, man, how do you come up with inspiration to write a song? Well, life events?
People write it. I tried to write different ways. Like, you know, the Eagles, they wrote all their music and had all the music laid out, and then they would do the lyrics. I've tried it that way. I've tried coming up with lyrics and then making things fit. But what tends to happen is a lot of times you get things on your mind. You're sitting around strumming on the guitar, and that music is kind of blending with what you're thinking, and a song just comes out. And it happens so fast, and you're like, where did that come from? And that tends to be the better ones that I write. I've got songs that I wrote over a year or two's time, but my best songs that people tend to like have been written in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about me, as far as from a musician's standpoint, in a song, you break it down, is it melody?
Yeah,
I mean, it's, well, you make got, it down for music.
You've got your chord progression, then you got the melody. You know, that was the Dean Dillon's big thing, is melody. Like empty glass, you know, when it starts all that. As simple as that is, when you play that, everybody knows what song you're doing. So those little melody notes is important. The hook line's important. And different people put importance on different things. But to me, it's just that capturing that feeling or that thought that you had. Mm-hmm. Well, and some of them, it's, you know, combinations of different things. I don't really have one thing that's probably the most important for me. But a lot of it just tends to just evolve and happen. And then you get out of the studio. Like, we had one song we were doing. We got to the studio. Well, he changes the drum part in part of it. Totally changes the sound of the song. But that's how bringing in different guys. And that song, it'll evolve over time.
It's kind of like a crock pot, man.
Exactly.
You know, you might be the pot roast, but when Mitch throws in some carrots and onions and potatoes and things like that, would you agree,
that's
right, Mitch?
That's
you
exactly
see
what it
see
is.
What I'm getting at?
Yeah.
And it all comes together to make one really delicious stew, man.
And that's what you miss when one guy plays all the parts, like we were talking about earlier. When one guy does everything, you've got one emotion there, and that's it.
Yeah.
But when you bring in 10 people, and they're 10 good musicians, there's things happen that none of y'all could have even thought about doing by yourself.
Well, let me ask Mitch, how do you come up with that your way of thinking, you know, of like, okay, if I do this and we do this a little faster, or we do it a little slower, or we add this part of it to emphasize that, how do you come up with that vision?
Well,
that
the biggest thing you have to do is arrange the part. So, for example, the fiddle player would send me a track. He's playing through 3 minutes of the song. And same if pedal steel or something like that, or a lead guitarist is picking through the whole song. So you can't let all of those parts play the whole time, or it's going to be noise. So you just have to, you know, take the volume out. And that's the hard part, is really, for me, is keeping what you want to keep and then getting rid of some stuff, because I like to hear it all. There's times where I have the pedal still going, the fiddle and the lead guitar, and my boys will come down and say, "Dad, that's too messy. You got to simplify that
a little bit. Too busy, so
too
to
busy.
Speak. Yeah.
Exactly. It's too busy. So
before I let you go, mention your boys and what instruments they play.
Brady's 19. He plays the pedal steel. Mm-hmm. He's been playing for about a year and a half. He actually bought his first pedal steel from Wayne, and I was really iffy on it because that's a hard instrument.
Yeah.
And he plays it pretty well. And he went up to Nashville this summer and got a nice one, a good one. Not that yours wasn't good,
yeah,
but he got a real
very
nice.
Yeah. He got a cobwebs on it, but it still sounds good. Yeah.
And then Jace is 17 and he plays bass. And they love it. We go downstairs and play all the time.
That's pretty cool, man.
I'm actually, Brady's off in college, so I'm missing him being downstairs playing with us.
Yeah, I bet you. All right. We're going to take our final break. We're going to come back, and we're going to ask Wayne to play a song that he's played at many a watered hole. So we're going to have a little fun with this. You're listening to the very first segment of Billy's Back Porch with Wayne Purvis and Mitch Markham. And welcome back to our very first edition of Billy's Back Porch with special guest Wayne Purvis and Mitch Markham. So first of all, before we perform this, I want to ask, where are you playing this weekend? Where can we find your social media information on social media to find out where you're going to be playing for the next month or so?
They can go on Facebook. It's on Wayne Purvis or Wayne and Waylon. There's two different Facebook pages.
Who's he?
Oh, that's my son, Waylon.
Okay,
he
cool,
plays with me.
Cool.
He got drafted.
Yeah, he did.
He kept telling me he wanted to play. One day I said, "All right, that's when you start next week."
Way to go. 10 years old.
Yeah. But this week will be, tonight's Friday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, tonight we'll be at the Iron Eagle from 4 to 8. Tomorrow we'll be at the Pier 2 at 3 o'clock. Sunday we'll be at the VFW South from 2 to 6, and then at Back to Butch's from 7 to 11.
By the way, Brooke is open to the Pier 2 Lounge.
Right.
And she's there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. Got Shorty helping her a little bit.
Yeah.
So y'all go on down there and enjoy yourself, Crystal, and you'll have a great time down there. How about you, my friend? Mitch, your boys playing anywhere in the next month or so, or where they can find out information about it?
I think we're playing September 11th
over in Jake.
Jake,
right?
Here. Yep.
Okay, we mentioned
over
that.
In Fort Pierce at Crocodillo, September 11th, I think we're playing.
All right, if you'd like to, anything y'all have come up, jump on WOKC's Facebook page, share it with us, or send it to me. We'll be glad to promote y'all any way we can to help this thing grow, man, and educate more folks about what's going on. So
appreciate it.
But All right, you ready to throw some suitcases, yes?
I think so.
Okay, all right. Set this up,
I thought he was kidding when he
said that. No.
Tell us about this.
I was playing over at Fort Pierce at the jetty, and we stopped by a bar on the way just to have lunch and everything because we got there a little early, and this guy named Mike Denny's up there playing. Well, he plays this song. Well, I'm just crying. I'm laughing so hard. And he said, this is the song I played to see if anybody's listening.
Okay. Yeah.
So a lot of times when we're in the bar, we'll play this song, and you see everybody's talking. There'll be one or two people over there in the corner. They're like, hey, listen to this song. And they'll be just rolling, laughing, and nobody else has any idea what's even going on. But over the years, it's got to where every time I play, I have to play this song.
All right, hold on before you do this. Right. Why don't we do this? Why don't you take a picture, and then we'll record a video of him performing this, okay? All right, so we'll do a poser. All right, everybody look at Mary Lee. We'll take a picture. There's one. I sucked it in. One more time.
3, 2, 1.
All right. Do you know how to hear? Do you have to record? Let me come bring it.
That's okay.
I've never recorded a video of this thing, but we're going to give it a shot. New phone, y'all. Video. Record. Okay. It's recording now.
This song would be good now because they got all the Uber drivers and all that stuff. It'd be good now. But it's just a song about a guy making the delivery down to Port St. Lucie, and the whole joke of the song is they had a roundabout in Port St. Lucie and everybody get lost. Now y'all got one right out front here. So. But if you go to Port St. Lucie, and you'd always get lost and turned around, couldn't find your way out of there. So he wrote a song about a delivery he had to make down there one afternoon. I was leaving the island out across the river. I had this package that I had to deliver somewhere down around Arosa Boulevard. Weather was hot as Madonna, but my tank was full and the tourists were gone, and that was cool, so I just made my way south, right on down US-1. Now I was leery of this guy named Brucey. He gave me the directions down here to Port St. Lucie, written in lipstick on a Southern Exposure business card. He said, go ride at something down at Prima Vista. Well, I got lost about Florista, and them damn directions blew out the window, and I got scared. 'Cause I'm lost in Port St. Lucie again. And I swore I'd never come back down here again. I can't tell if I'm going east or west. I should have brought my GPS, 'cause I'm lost in Port St. Lucie again. Now without them directions, well, I was SOL, and that box on the seat, it had a funny smell. Kind of an Avon perfume like my first grade teacher used to wear. Well, I was anything but infatuated when I opened that box and she self-inflated. And there was a blow-up doll named Suitcase Susie sitting right next to me. Well, her orifices were quivering and her mouth was all round. And the next thing I heard was a siren sound, and sure enough, there's the police right on my tail. Well, he pulled me over and he looked real fierce. He said, you and your girlfriend are lost and you're definitely from Fort Pierce. And I said, yes, officer, please get me back to US-1. 'Cause I'm lost in Port St. Lucie once more. If you'll just get me back up there to US-1, sir, I swear I won't never come down here anymore. 'Cause I'm lost in Port St. Lucie again. Well, the cops let me go, and I hauled ass to the jetty bar, and I pulled old Suitcase Susie out of the car, and I set her on a stool next to me and ordered us both a drink. I could tell I was back in the Sunrise City when this guy walked by and said, man, your girlfriend's pretty. And he took old suitcase Susie right on out to his truck. Well, bless St. Lucie, bless St. Lucie West. And bless that dyslexic engineer who designed the whole dang mess. And bless Suitcase Susie, wherever she may be. And bless your ass if you get lost in Port St. Lucie.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Whew. Thank you, Mary Lee, for doing that. All right.
It's okay, man.
You can laugh, do whatever. Oh, my goodness. Let's hit that button. We're good. Yeah. Thank you. That was sweet. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Well, gentlemen, man, anything before I let y'all go? First of all, thank you very much for coming in. And, Mitch, thanks for mentioning this to Ken years ago and us to finally be able to make this work. I look forward to, and I hope, folks, I hope you, I know you've enjoyed it. This is unheard of in today's radio business, and I think it's something that probably Mr. Stokes, may rest in peace, would be very proud that we're trying to do in Okeechobee County and the surrounding counties from coast to coast, man. And
I'm sure he would.
Yeah, you know. Anything else, man, in passing, guys?
That was
good?
A lot of fun.
Wasn't it? Yeah. And Mitch was like, how you going to fill an hour? How we going to fill an hour? You can go on for another time. So y'all ready for beer?
Yes, sir.
Me too. Absolutely. Beer for breakfast. All right. Thank you once again to each and every one of you for listening. Taylor's Afternoon Show will be on from 2 to 6. Thank you to our wonderful morning show sponsors. And we're going to wrap things up with our two sign-off songs, Grandpa Jones and Johnny Cash's Orange Blossom Special. Brahman game tonight starts off with Kenny Buckner show at 6 p.m. We go live at 6:30. Kickoff is at 7. Taylor's show from 2 to 6. She'll carry you right up to the Kenny Buckner show. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Another fine day of broadcasting. I am out of here. See ya.